Oh yeah, that was Beth Hart and Joe Bonamassa, and that was called "Can't Let You Go." Now I'm joined in studio by Philip O'Connor, who's a local author and historian, and he's here from the Howth, Sutton, Baldoyle, and the 1916 Rising Commemoration Committee. Good afternoon. How are you? You're welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thursday, today actually, at 8 p.m. in the Marine Hotel, Sutton, there's a series of events happening, and today's the fourth one, isn't that right?
Yeah, last year a very diverse group of people came together and formed the Howth, Sutton, Baldoyle 1916 Commemoration Committee, which will be basically looking at commemoration events over the next few years. And we're starting off with our first event tonight with presenting the history of the whole that whole period of conflict, that whole period of struggle from 1912 right through to the end of the setting up of the state and the end of the Civil War.
Okay, but in context with the area that you're...
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's about what happened locally during those years. This has never been studied before, really. But in fact, it's a very colourful and extraordinary story because it's such a mixed type of community in Howth and Sutton, Baldoyle. You had a very interesting series of developments over those years.
Well, tell us about some of them, Philip.
Okay. Well, I suppose what everyone knows about is the what's called the Howth gun running, which the famous historian F.X. Martin said was one of the three important events. Without the gun running, there could never have been the 1916 Rising, and without the 1916 Rising, there could never have been the Declaration of Independence in 1921. So it's in January 1919. So it's so it was a very big event, and there was local involvement in that, particularly the fishermen of Howth, who both helped bring land guns in at Kilcool and Wicklow, and also more or less stood guard on the pier against the local coast guards and RIC to enable the Asgard, the yacht, get away again. But an awful lot more happened.
Yeah. Did that culminate in, correct me if I'm mistaken, did that culminate in people being killed and shot on Ormond Quay, was it?
You're on Bachelor's Walk.
Yeah.
Yes, you're quite
Bachelor's
right.
Bachelor's Walk, yeah.
when they landed about 800 guns at Howth, 800 or 900 guns, and the volunteers were ready to collect them, and they march into town. They had to move fast to get through Sutton Cross before it could be cut off by the military. And unlike the gun running in the north, where the UVF was armed with the connivance of the British Army, and there was no interference in it at all, and they landed 28,000 guns up there, the British Army intervened at the bottom of Malahide Road, in fact, and there was a showdown there. And after a scuffle and some firing of shots and so on, most of the volunteers managed to get through with their guns. But the same unit of soldiers, when they arrived back, they were the Scottish-owned Borderers, at the Highland Borderers, I think they were called. when they came to Bachelor's Walk, the crowd started jeering them, this people of the city.
Yeah.
And they opened fire just indiscriminately on the crowd, not even on the volunteers were nowhere in sight at this stage, and they killed three people outright and wounded nearly 40 in that incident.
Yeah, yeah. So tonight's event, it says here in the press release, the story has been reconstructed from the press of the time, witness statements and other records. Is it a talk, or can you just open that up a little bit for me?
It's what we'd call an illustrated lecture, so we'll be talking for about an hour and showing the story of the whole period of the Rising right through the War of Independence and the setting up of the state, and it'll be illustrated with
slides,
a lot
and so
of photographs
forward, yeah. And
that
slides
have never
and stuff.
Been seen. Slides, oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And people who have whose role at the time has been type of forgotten, like, for example, in the first local elections 1920 there, some very colourful people stood for the independence movement, people like William Sinclair, who was the head of the only Jewish family in Howth, for example, or Catherine McCall, very famous literary critic in her own right, and also the wife of P.J. McCall, who wrote a lot of very popular songs which are still around today, and was a great scholar and so forth. And there was also unionist people. There was a strong unionist community in Howth at the time, and we'll be looking at how they managed to come through that whole time, and how community relations in the area, people working together despite differences on the big question. And that's probably one of the most interesting parts of the whole story.
Well, just on that, can you tell us a little bit about the relationship between the unionist people? Were they threatened? Did they feel under pressure? Were they frightened?
There was nothing like that at all. They formed in Howth and Sutton anyway. They formed nearly a third of the population, and they're very strong. Some of the most powerful leaders of unionism in Ireland lived out there. Andrew Jamieson, you know, from the whiskey. He lived there, and God be good to him, exactly. He's a lovely whiskey. But he was a leader of the Irish Unionist Alliance, and he played a key role in bringing about negotiations between De Valera and the British government, in fact. But there was no, and we've interviewed an awful lot of people locally, their family stories and so on. There's never any hint of any local intimidation or anything of that description. In fact, quite the contrary. Although people disagreed over the fundamental issue of whether Ireland, like the people had expressed their wish for an independent Ireland, they continued to work together on all the local issues, street lighting, drainage, and that on the local council. And they even joined together to pass motions, after the Black and Tans had done something horrendous, particularly horrendous, like the killing of the shooting up of a pitch and toss game in Sutton and killing of people there. They'd unite in condemning that type of thing, and also in the Civil War. So the community relations survived extremely well. What type of broke the back of a lot of the unionist community in that area was not this development at all, but the First World War, most of the unionist community there were mostly professional people, business people, and just naturally loyal to the British Empire and so forth. And they suffered the highest toll of people killed in the First World War from that area were from amongst the Unionist community, killed on the Western Front or in Gallipoli and all these places, terrible places, whereas the amount of people recruited from other communities was far, far, far less proportionally. So that broke a lot of families. You'd have families where two or three people were lost, or even if they survived, people who had budding careers in the law and all types of things, they had mental health issues or drink problems, and it's related, which I'd really recommend. There's a fabulous history of the Findlater family, who were important in Howth at the time, and it's written by one of the Findlaters himself, and it's it gives a very harrowing account of the whole experience of a family like that, of the First World War and so on. But as I say, the First World War didn't affect other people so much at all. Like, there was a lot of work in agriculture on farms. So when it came to the independence movement, there was a real groundswell of support for it.
Yeah, just on that Findlater account, is it available anywhere to get your hands on
it? In fact, if you go to the Findlater website, the site of Findlater's company, who are still around, they used to run all those famous shops all over Dublin way back. They've made it available free online, so you can you can just download it as a PDF or read it online, whatever. And it's a very good account.
You mentioned there the unionist population, how it's losing a huge amount of people in the First World War, as opposed to
relatively.
But the unionists, stop me if I'm wrong or correct me. The unionist people would have, through their loyalty, have willingly gone off to fight.
Yes.
Whereas if we look back at the likes of the great fabulous series Strumpet City. The Catholic population would have gone, took the king's shilling, as it were, because it would have financial necessity, isn't that right?
Yeah,
it's not that they wanted to go and fight the Hun or whatever. It was mixed.
There were people. John Redmond, the leader of the Irish Party in Westminster, called on people to go and fight the Hun because he was relying on support for the British government to get home rule.
Yeah,
and some people did follow that, and we have families in Howth who did follow that, who were very closely connected with Redmond and his party. Yeah. And some of those families lost people in the war. But Padraig Yates is a great historian. He's written some wonderful and very easy to read books about Dublin through all those years, Dublin City. And he's done an analysis of all that the greatest number of people outside, there was a large number of people from unionist background joined up because that was a loyalist type of duty. There were some people, not that many really, I don't think, from the Redmondite side, who joined up out of a home rule type of idea. But the vast majority of people from this area, I go into details in my talk tonight, came, as you say, from poor working class families. Mm-hmm. In fact, sometimes very poor families. Yeah. Like, there's one family I know who lost somebody in the First World War. They had a small farm of 2.5 acres, 2 cows and a goat, and that's what a family of 7 people were living on.
Yeah.
And these were the people who, I mean, what you could earn as a soldier in the British Army was nearly twice what you'd earn as a labourer at the time.
Yeah.
It was, and at the start, which is when people joined up, they didn't join up so much afterwards. At the start, everyone was told it'd be a romp to Berlin, you'd be home by Christmas, and no one reckoned on the German army, you know.
Yeah, but then they said that about Second World War as well. It won't take long to mop this up. I mean, that's sheer nonsense, you know.
It's terrible, actually, when you go back at the time and read the speeches made at recruitment rallies and that, which were held around Beldoyle and all the type of things that were being said in justification of the war would make your blood run cold, you know.
Yeah. Philip, with regard to Easter week itself, there are people in the country who today look back on that period and the Easter Rising of 1916 and say that was a mistake, that needn't have happened. We would have got our freedom. Ireland would have been free without recourse to violence and taking the GPO and the rest of that went on Easter week. What's your feeling about that?
Yeah, I understand. And John Bruton, a former Taoiseach, who owed his job to the fact that that a state was established here in the first place. But no, I don't agree at all. I think it was obvious. By 1915, Redmond's thing on Home Rule was finished. It was a dead letter. He'd formed a coalition with the Unionists, Westminster. He'd appointed a Unionist as Chief Justice in Ireland. There was the whole row about conscription in Ireland. The idea that Home Rule of any substance would ever have been granted was just gone, and we can see his whole movement evaporating. Even before 1915, his National Volunteers had more or less disappeared. People were defecting over to this new movement that rose after 1916, Sinn Féin. And Sinn Féin, De Valera once said, a British journalist asked him, he taught this very complicated Irish question, can you help me to explain? He said, it's very simple. People voted here overwhelmingly to establish a republic, and that's what we are trying to do. But 1916, look at some of the leaders, Connolly and Pearse. Just 3 years earlier, they were home rulers. They thought this could work out. What changed everything was the Great War. And Britain striving to expand its empire at the time and so forth, and to fight various, they extended it to Turkey, to the Middle East, which we're still having to deal with. This wasn't, everything was now being solved by military means. There was no, in 1916, there was no parliaments. There was and you know, by that time, the idea that anything was going to come out of that system in terms of an Irish system was just people's belief in that collapsed, you know.
Yeah, but this thing harking back to the leaders and blood sacrifice, it demands blood sacrifice. I mean, that's, I'm not sure about that. You know what I mean? That we have to shed blood for this. It's a gory type of a feeling. Do you know what I
think? Very few of them thought like that.
Didn't Padraig Pearse think like that?
The war had, as I said, changed everything. And if you look at what the language that everyone was speaking at the time, you mentioned Huns and all this. The Irish Times called the First World War a holy war.
Yeah.
People were and went on about the great sacrifices of our people at the front as if it was a glorious thing. When Pearse said those things, very near to the Rising itself, not beforehand, he was a very level-headed guy and a very interesting educationalist, amongst other things. Mm. He was speaking the language that people were talking at the time. But you find most people went out in 1916, it was with a view, this has to be done.
Yeah.
They weren't military people. They weren't people who enjoyed, or some of them were, but the vast majority, Connolly was a trade union organiser, a socialist. They just felt this had to be done. If this wasn't done, it was the end of the country having a future. That was really the conviction. And I just think of the men from Baldoyle who went out.
Yeah.
And they're very interesting. They were just, there's a group of them. Some of them were just ordinary farm labourers who had joined the transport union and to join Connolly's citizen army, and they set out. One man was in the defence of Davies Bridge and afterwards in the fought with Countess Markovic in College Green. Another James McCormack, who went out, left a big family behind to go in and to take his part, and fought in the GPO and was killed by a sniper's bullet. Another man there, Joseph McDonough, also from, but they were all farm labourers from Baldoyle, and Mick Nolan, who was a transport union guy who had led the great strike of farm workers a couple of years ago that, would you believe it, got their weekly hours down to 60 hours a week and their wages up to 17 shillings. These are the times we're talking about. Still, those people had the conviction that this needed to be done, and and they did it. People talking about blood sacrifices and all that, you find very little of it when you actually look at it closely, you know.
Okay, Philip, well, tonight is the first of the events, and that's in the Marine Hotel in Sutton. I had to say that. What's happening then after that? Is there, you've got other stuff lined up, obviously.
Well, lined up would be the wrong word. We're planning to do just a couple of specific events over next year, including together with SIPTU, we're putting a plaque up to those Irish Citizen Army people that I mentioned in Baldoyle. We were planning on a concert involving local schools next year, and a few other events like that. We're also hoping to, we've done a lot of research, which is behind this story tonight, and we're hoping to produce a book that'll be of interest to people of all backgrounds and, might I add, all opinions about those times.
Very good. Okay, I think we'll leave it there, unless you want to add anything to that, Philip.
No, that's thanks very much. Well, if you are.
Right, because we've got to move on and make way for the next presenter who's coming up in 7 or 8 minutes, and that will be the great Richie Walker. I have to say that about him. If I didn't say that about him, he'd come in and cut the head off me, so he would. Anyway, hope it's a very successful evening tonight, and you're looking for you're hoping for a big crowd. Are you a packed house?
Well, it's a big room. It, as I say, it's for people interested in both the issues and in the very local details of what happened in that area, not just in 1916, but in the War of Independence too. I think if they're interested, everybody is more than welcome. There'll be plenty of time. We're keeping the lecture to under an hour, so people will have plenty of time to add to it, or to ask questions, or to raise their own opinions.
Can I just ask, is it a free event?
Oh, it's free. Absolutely. Yes, there's no charge or anything like that, and I should add that that it's actually kind of Al Ryan, who owns the hotel, has made this fabulous room available to us, because his own family had interesting connections with the Rising and so forth, so we're very grateful for that. And as I said, everybody's welcome, and every opinion is welcome, and if people have, and especially we'd be interested to hear, because there are gaps in what we have been, small gaps I must say, we've been able to collate really an awful lot of what did happen in the whole area during those years, but there are gaps, and if people have information they can bring along or
fill them in,
can help us to fill them in, would be fantastic.
Okay. Well, listen, I hope the weather is good for people who are intending to go along, because when you came in you said it was atrocious out there. So
it is at the moment. Hopefully it'll cheer up later.
It might change in the afternoon. Okay, Philip, thanks a million for coming in and talking to me.
Right, thanks very much.